Welcome everyone to episode 207 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Mark Baker to review Liverpool's 3-1 win over Sheffield United.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
So another step in the right direction for Liverpool in this Premier League title race. A lot harder than many of us hoped slash expected against the team bottom of the table. Liverpool took the lead in unusual circumstances through Darwin Nunez in the 17th minute. Then the game basically just hovered at that dangerous 1-0 mark until just before the hour when it's gone down as a Conor Bradley own goal, actually. Levels things up for Sheffield United. And then with 15 minutes to go, Alexis McAllister, much to the relief of everybody inside Anfield, puts Liverpool back in front of Cody Gakpo, seals the points just before stoppage time. So Liverpool managed to get the 3 points. They labour their way to the victory. And it means they are back 2 points ahead of Arsenal, 3 points ahead of Manchester City in this title race, which of course takes them to Old Trafford next at the weekend. So Mark, if you could just sort of sum up that game in three words for me as usual. And also, I mean, take me through how you saw that performance, because we know how poor Sheffield United are, but that was hard work for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think three words would probably be a nervous experience. I felt it turned into that in the end. And there was a point sort of, with however long it was, 15 minutes ago, where you sort of staring at it thinking Liverpool are going to throw away the chance at the league title. It's a possibly, I mean, certainly in possession, the probably worst team I've seen in the Premier League. I don't think I can think of a team more limited. I think the statistics showed that it was actually the least possession that any team has actually accumulated over 90 minutes in the Premier League. And it felt like that as well. It felt like they were really limited. But Liverpool got themselves into a situation in the second half in which it became nervous. I think it's always important to look at the sort of overall of the game, isn't it? And I think, let's be honest, I mean, Liverpool, like I've just said, accumulated the most possession ever in a Premier League game and for long spells were totally dominant. Struggled to maybe create the chances, maybe the final pass, maybe the final decision to take the game away from Sheffield United. But the longer it stayed at 1-0 and it went into the second half, Liverpool had a scrappy period which lasted for about 10 minutes. And within that scrappy period where Liverpool gave the ball away at certain times, Sheffield United gained a little bit of territory. There was a little bit of nervousness creeping. And within that spell, obviously, Sheffield United then got a goal. And within that sort of spell, Liverpool lost the way for me. I felt that there was a period where you were suddenly thinking to yourself, actually, Liverpool aren't creating opportunities anymore. It's sort of getting a bit busy, the game. It's becoming broken up. And Sheffield United actually looked pretty comfortable at that stage, sort of sitting behind the ball, where in the first half, although Liverpool didn't really create massive opportunities in terms of ones you felt, oh, that was a gilt-edged opportunity, a gilt-edged miss. They were creating enough and having enough in the opposition area that you felt the opportunities would be taken. Whereas in that second half spell, Liverpool did lose the way. And it made you sort of worried for the outcome of the result then, because that panic crept into the crowd. You could sort of see that panic crept into some of the Liverpool players as well. You felt, was it going to be a situation in which they were going to sort of rush the outcomes in the final third, and then ultimately Sheffield United had come away with a draw, which would have been disastrous, really. But as it happened, obviously, Alexis McAllister steps up with a fantastic goal. And then from then on, it was pretty comfortable in the way that you never felt that Sheffield United could hurt Liverpool. But I think in general, I think for me, the outcome of the game is, again, Liverpool started slowly. They could have been behind in the game before they even had a kick at the ball, really. Liverpool have got to start better. And then within the game, when Liverpool are conceding chances, they tend to be big chances, and the reliance on the goalkeeper or the opposition actually not taking them chances. And I think them two things before the end of the season, Liverpool have got to get a lot better at, because they will be punished. I have no doubt in my mind. If they don't start well enough, they'll get into a situation where they can't retrieve the game. And also, if they do tend to concede big chances, then the opposition will start to take them, and Liverpool will not be in the situation where they'll continually overperform in terms of, you know, the outcomes of opposition not taking the amounts of expected goals that they should, really. I think they're the two big things that are against the better team, I think, will hamper Liverpool towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I want to revisit that in a second. I think disastrous is right in terms of what, you know, how bad would that have been if Liverpool hadn't won that game? I think my three words would probably be blood pressure tested, and kind of in an unexpected way, to be honest, because looking at the fixture schedule, sort of in the weeks around this game, and almost just kind of sitting there before it started as well, you thought to yourself, this should be the one game almost within this whole period that is relatively straightforward for Liverpool. They should be able to come through it relatively easily. I mean, Sheffield United have 15 points. They are, I mean, like you said, Mark, they are probably one of the poorest Premier League teams we've seen in recent years. And we've seen some of the unfortunate records they've broken in their home games. And yes, they have improved recently. But this was obviously the team who were kind of a net first, if you like, playing the team who were bottom. And you thought, is this the kind of game where we're going to see Liverpool, you know, just stroll to like a 5-0 victory or something like that? I remember in 18-19, I think it was in between the games against Barcelona or just before the first leg, Liverpool played Huddersfield, who I think were either down or as good as down at that point, and they just walked to a 5-0 win. And you thought, is that going to be the kind of thing you saw? And even just looking at the 11 and the golf and quality and things like that, everything seemed to point to it being extremely comfortable Liverpool. It was obviously anything but. To draw that game wouldn't have been sort of fatal by any means for the title race, but in terms of the margin for error, because I do think Liverpool are going to be able to afford to slip up somewhere, because I think all three teams are going to. I said this on the last podcast, but there's a big difference between doing that here and doing that United away or Spurs at home or Villarreal or whatever that may be. This was a game that, you know, there's absolutely no excuses regardless of what happened on the pitch, I think, for not being able to win this match. And Liverpool almost did the best not to do that. And I was sort of sat there in that period, in the sort of 20 minutes or so between the equaliser and McAllister putting Liverpool back in front, think, you know, like you, Mark, really just sort of wondering, God, what do I say almost on this podcast if I have to try and digest a result like this? But thankfully, it's not come to that. It was a scare, not one that we expected, and maybe a little bit of a worrying one, as we'll come to in a second. But obviously, to a degree, it's all only the results that matter. And in terms of the game as a whole, I mean, I think you mentioned the spell Sheffield United had. You always get that sense, don't you, in a match when it's 1-0 and it's drifting. You almost know in the back of your mind that something bad's about to happen. And it kind of had that feel to it, despite Liverpool's dominance. I mean, I hadn't even seen that possession stat before we started recording. That's unbelievable, 16%. But despite that, as much as you have that voice in your head that I mentioned about, God, we're not about to throw this away against Sheffield United of all teams, I think the logical part of you thinks there's no way they're going to be able to sustain, you know, as much as they probably had defended quite well. I just didn't see them sustaining kind of against the pressure of the Liverpool crowd and the players Liverpool had until the end. And obviously Liverpool managed to break through twice. So before we move on to kind of the players who impressed us tonight, as we usually talk about, I mean, I want to revisit some of the points you made earlier, Mark, in terms of why Liverpool. I mean, I'm looking at that sort of 84% possession and then trying to think before that McAllister goal, how many sort of really big clear-cut chances were there. So why do you think it was such a struggle, you know, despite that golfing class? I mean, we saw what Arsenal did to Sheffield United, for example. And I know you've already alluded to this, but how many of the issues that we saw in this game do you think we need to be concerned about for sort of the next 8 matches, and how many of them can sort of be isolated to this particular one, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, I understand, Dave. I think I was looking at half-time, the two players for Liverpool who had the most touches of the ball with Ibrahim Akinati and Joe Gomez, and I think that told the tale of Sheffield United by design giving Liverpool's least productive players on the ball possession, essentially. And when that happens and you've got your least creative players getting on the ball, that's always going to cause some kind of issue. I mean, the Joe Gomez thing for Liverpool at the moment, I mean, don't get me wrong, Joe Gomez has had a good season largely, but I don't really, I mean, today, for example, he was coming inside the pitch, obviously by design. We know Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't there. But largely, since Alexander-Arnold has been out the side, Liverpool have been playing with a much more sort of structured 4-3-3, if you like, with Alexis McAllister and Endo as two sort of dual players in midfield, two players playing on roughly the same lines. Obviously, Endo tasked with being the more player who's the defensive player in terms of breaking up the play, and Alexis McAllister able to get on the ball. Now, for me, that's Alexis McAllister's best position playing as part of the two. And I think it's worked really well for Liverpool. It's allowed Connor Bradley to play down the right-hand side of the pitch, do what he's good at, essentially, by holding the width. And also, it's benefited Luis Diaz in some ways as well, because with Alexander-Arnold not coming in field, and then that sort of higher left-sided eight position not taking up a lot of the positions that Diaz would operate in, and Diaz then having to come inside and play inside rather than receiving the ball to feet and travelling with the ball from that left-hand side. I think that's really worked in the sense of it's improved Luis Diaz's form. Joe Gomez came inside the field today, which, again, was fine in terms of what it created for Luis Diaz, because that allows the passing lane to be open for Luis Diaz to receive. And I actually think he played really well in the first half, Luis Diaz, for Liverpool, and was probably Liverpool's best and most productive player. Unfortunately, however, this sort of experiment with Gomez coming into the field, I understand the sense that positionally, because he is playing that position, if you like, as an individual, it can benefit Liverpool by getting Luis Diaz on the ball. However, as an individual, rather than with the player profile that Joe Gomez has, I don't see what it offers you, because essentially you're playing a player in there who's not comfortable receiving the ball with pressure from multiple sides. He is essentially, for me, a centre-half who's done a good job at covering full-back positions largely. I think at times he can get caught out sort of positional-wise. I thought he really struggled at Manchester United in the first half. But I feel that didn't help Liverpool, because he was the free player. He was the player receiving the ball and unable to really progress the ball or do anything meaningful with it. So I felt that was an issue. And I don't really see why that has to continue now. I think with Liverpool having Tsimikas, Robertson, all better options at that left-back area, I see that that will hopefully improve Liverpool in that sense, because it was definitely something that Sheffield United targeted in terms of leaving the ball with Kanati and Joe Gomez. And I felt that, amongst other things, was something that Liverpool struggled with slightly. Now, in the second half, obviously, when Klopp made the changes, you're then putting Curtis Jones into sort of that position as the free player in midfield. That made a massive difference to Liverpool, I felt. I mean, we'll probably go on to talk about the second half and the changes and what Klopp sort of did with them. But, yeah, if you're going to have an extra player playing in that central role, it has to be someone who can contribute with the ball, for me. And that was an element of problems for Liverpool.
Yeah, and thankfully in that regard, Trent is obviously close to coming back. He's, I think he's in team training next week, based on the update from Klopp that we had before this game. And just to again come back to something you said earlier, Mark. I mean, this thing about Liverpool's defending and maybe getting a little bit lucky sometimes with opponents not taking chances. No clean sheet again here. I think it's been quite a while since Liverpool had one. You can say that they're sort of overrated in terms of their importance. Man City really haven't kept many this season, for example. And again, Liverpool have a lot of attacking talent and they've not kept a huge amount of clean sheets. They're still top of the league. All of these things you can say, but I mean, in this particular game, it's probably one you hear Mark and say, it's probably the most likely game all season to keep a clean sheet. Like you say, still giving up chances. I mean, is there a concern that Liverpool maybe aren't going to be able to pick up those kind of 1-0 wins that they might need between now and the end of the season? And that, I mean, those kind of numbers you alluded to earlier as well, is that something that should be kind of nagging at the back of our minds? Or can we kind of partly put that down to the fact that, I know today we saw Kanate come back, but it's been a lot of chopping and changing in the back four, and it's not really been settled there and hasn't been the best player. So maybe that's something that improves when those players return.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that Liverpool have done magnificently this season when you consider some of the key players and key individuals that they've had out, especially in the back line. Obviously, we know Alexander-Arnold's been missing, the goalkeeper's been missing, Kanati's had his periods out, the left-backs have obviously had a situation where they've been in and out. And they've had a brand-new midfield sort of fitting in and the elements around that, how to defend without the ball and all that kind of thing. So I understand that there's been issues, and largely Liverpool have done very well defensively, you know, when you consider against the majority of the league. Of course, the problem is they're competing against Manchester City and Arsenal, and the underlying numbers show that Liverpool give away too many big chances. and they've overperformed that up to this season. Now, up to this point of this season, but you just believe that. I mean, as well, it's probably a consequence of style as well, Dave, isn't it? I mean, Liverpool are far more direct, far more inclined to potentially see possession in dangerous areas by trying to go a lot more vertical than Manchester City and Arsenal. But at Arsenal in particular, when you look at the numbers, I mean, it's hard for anyone to even get in Arsenal's penalty area, never mind, you know, score a goal against them. So there is a massive gulf. And the one thing I'd say is, I do agree that there's been personnel loss for Liverpool, but at the early stage of the season when Liverpool were playing and they had them players available, your Alissons, your Trent Alexander-Arnolds, your Matip Okanati, Liverpool's differential in terms of the amount of chances they were conceding in comparison to the other two teams was still, you know, enough to suggest that Liverpool are by far the weakest defensive side. Now, you can balance that off by saying, will Liverpool generate the most chances and create the most goal-scoring opportunities and expected goals? So there is a balance to be had. So it's which stylistic's going to win out, isn't it? You know, are Liverpool going to be vulnerable and ultimately it's going to cost them in a certain game where the game gets away from them? It's not often Liverpool go two goals behind, which gives them an opportunity to then recover the scoreline. But they've had, according to the numbers anyway, games in which that could have happened. If that happens, that could be fatal for Liverpool. So I do agree, Dave, in that sense. They've got to get, you know, they've got to start better and they've got to give away less big chances. And if they do, hopefully they can maximise enough points till the end of the season. But I think we both would probably feel that Liverpool's fate is going to be decided in the away games and how they're able to manage the counter-attacks and opportunities that, you know, them opposition sides will get. Because I think they, in them away games, will define whether Liverpool win the league, how they are able to manage their moments, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think after today as well, and I'm just sort of trying to check this as I talk, that Liverpool only have three Premier League home games left, and they do Crystal Palace, Tottenham, and then Wolves. So that's five of the last eight away from home. So again, and obviously, and you know, some of the opponents Liverpool have, you know, Everton, which is always tricky, even though they're opposite ends of the table. United at the weekend, Aston Villa as well. Huge tests in store. And it feels like, you know, much like you've been saying, Mark, it's harder to sort of ride your luck in those games as opposed to, you know, doing it at Anfield. Weirdly, Liverpool, I think for the most part, there's a saying that I remember going around a few years ago, you know, beat the dross, win the league. And Liverpool, I think, of aside from maybe Luton, maybe there's one other one in there that I'm not really remembering, but I think they've beaten every other team in the bottom half of the table in each other match. But against the promoted sides, they tended to make hard work of it. I mean, obviously the draw at Luton, going behind when Liverpool played them at Anfield, conceded equalisers against Burnley and Sheffield United at home, and in the away games against those two teams, they're obviously pretty much down and dead and buried and have been for ages. It took very late goals to turn it into 2-0 victories. So I don't know why it is. Liverpool seem to be better against the teams almost between 11 and 17 than they are in 18 and 20. So I don't know if there's anything in that at all, but thankfully it's not been the sort of Achilles heel that it was last season, although there are obviously many weaknesses for that particular Liverpool side. It's interesting as well, you know, as you mentioned, Arsenal there, I sort of think for them, and I was thinking this when you were watching the game against Luton yesterday, I mean, few players out, you wonder, is it going to be a game where they maybe waste a load of chances and somehow it ends up being goalless or Luton nick a goal and it's 1-1, and back to almost earlier in the season when Arsenal went, you know, they were creating opportunities but weren't taking them. I think that's probably what you're still relying on in terms of them dropping more points, because I do agree with you. I mean, some of their defensive performances, and we're talking about not only against the weaker teams, but also the top sides in terms of the control that they exert, you know, it's undeniably very impressive. City, I think it's harder to sort of place where their relative weakness is, whether they'll kind of go up a level or not. I do think they look a bit more vulnerable defensively and just not generally as good as they have been in previous years. But in terms of that contrast between Liverpool and Arsenal, it's definitely interesting. In terms of the individuals today, you kind of were off it a little bit. There was a lot of people sort of around me in the stadium who were moaning at Ryan Gravenberch, and I feel for him a bit because he's come into the team after a while of not starting. Don't think he played especially well, but I also don't think he was any worse than a lot of the players around him who were not generally on the game. And I sort of think in his situation, you've almost got a higher bar to come up to because you're naturally going to be the scapegoat in that scenario if the team is struggling because you're not the regular starter. You're the one who's not fully won over the fan base yet. And as much as I thought he was kind of on that sort of five out of 10 level that most of the players were, I think it was sort of inevitable that a lot of people would latch on to him not having the best game. He obviously comes off, and there's maybe a discussion to be had about how much he should play between now and the end of the season, whether maybe there's the Europa League for him or something like that. But also, I mean, beyond Gravenberch, the other one that kind of jumped out to me in terms of struggling was Salah. And I still wouldn't have taken him off straight after conceding an equaliser. I know it's all pre-planned subs and fatigue and all that, but I think there's got to be an element of tact coming in there. And just because that ended up working out, I don't know if it's something I want to see repeated. So I wouldn't have subbed him off, but I just don't think he looks fully fit at the moment. Like, he's had his injury, maybe came back too early, comes back again. Maybe that kind of process has knocked him a bit, but I just don't think his sort of level in his performances has been, you know, it's not been great all season, if we're being honest, even if the numbers have been there. But yeah, I mean, today and against Brighton as well, even though he obviously ends up getting the winner in that game, which is typical Salah, I suppose, just doesn't look like he's quite at his best. So hopefully he can sort of play his way up to that level before the end of the season, because that could be critical, especially if Liverpool are needing to score two to win most of those games as well. But we'll sort of park that, because that's all kind of the negatives and maybe some of the more concerning things from today, because, you know, we can't just kind of fully ride the high of every victory. We've got to sort of be balanced about it, because there's a lot of challenges on the horizon of Liverpool. But let's sort of focus on the positives then. I mean, Mark, which players do you think Klopp is going to sort of be very grateful to at the end of that game for almost bailing them out a little bit with the results? Because again, we've had a lot of games recently where it's been like, God, you could name everyone in the team for this segment. But I think today it's much much more the case of two or three you really sort of stepped up.
Yeah, I felt it was the substitutes really, Dave. I think they changed the course of the game. I think, like I say, Liverpool have lost the way. I felt Luis Diaz was good in the first half and has been for a number of weeks now. His ball retention in the final third, I think, has been fantastic, and being able to progress the ball when he travels with it as well. Again, that passing lane being open to him, allowing him to then, you know, have more time and space to try and manipulate the ball and essentially drive it forward for Liverpool. But he faded in the second half, and it was the substitutes. So for a number of different reasons, really. I felt, obviously, Curtis Jones coming onto the middle of the pitch. And obviously, you mentioned Gravenberch before, Joe Gomez. Players in there who were turning the ball over quite often and not offering a great deal of value when they were on the ball in terms of what they could essentially do with it. Now, Curtis Jones, without playing, you know, progressing the ball and creating chances, just the control he exerts when he's in possession, allowing Liverpool to keep the ball ticking over, keep progressing it into nice areas of the field, making sure that Liverpool can circulate the ball, maintain attacks. You know, he'll be a massive player coming back for Curtis Jones. I mean, I know you know I'm a massive fan of him, but I felt it really made sure that Liverpool could get on the ball, not panic in the situation where many people were losing their heads, exert some calmness. And essentially, I can't remember him actually losing the ball. I'd be surprised if he actually gave the ball away once in the whole time he was on the field. Andy Robertson on the left-hand side. Liverpool, as I mentioned before, with Joe Gomez playing on the left-hand side, essentially they haven't got a left-footed player within the side, which means that it narrows the pitch for them. Robertson coming onto that left-hand side and being able to drive up and down, using that left foot to open up the pitch. A great cross for Gakpo, but also the areas that he was getting in. I think the Alexis McAllister goal actually came from Robertson progressing the ball and crossing into the penalty area. And he was a really good outlet for Liverpool. Should have actually scored at the back post, but we all know what his execution's like with finishing when it comes to him in them areas. But I felt he really made a difference in stretching the pitch. And Harvey Elliott as well, because like Jones, he's probably in that sort of congested area, in the high areas of midfield, just always making the right decision, always probing, and created chances by going over the top as well. He's, apart from Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's the one player for me in Liverpool's side, maybe Alexis McAllister as well, but can play round over or through you. And I felt he gave a little bit more variety to Liverpool when he came on. And I think he's been brilliant the last few weeks, Dave, but I must say, Harvey Elliott. And it's just disappointing, really, because it's almost like Klopp doesn't see him playing as one of them three midfield players when, for example, this particular game, I would have played him instead of Gravenberch. And again, Gravenberch's got huge potential in terms of his receiving skills, but I just think Elliott's been so good and makes such good decisions and, you know, mature decisions in the final third, but he only seems to see him playing off that right-hand side at the moment, when obviously, you know, Liverpool's best attacking player is normally situated. So I felt all of them players made a huge difference to Liverpool being able to obtain, you know, the outcome in the game. And of course, Alexis McAllister, I mean, he's been fantastic, Dave. I mean, you know, I was a big fan of him anyway coming into the club, but his ability to play high, low, like I said, I think I said at the start of the season, almost Gundogan-like in the way you can morph him into different positions, and the way he's coming up with match-winning performances, whether it be the final pass or the execution of the final shot. I mean, what a finish that was. And that was the key moment in the game, because Liverpool were still struggling. They were getting the ball into good areas, but someone to have that level of execution at that crucial moment. And I think that's one of the big underrated things about Alexis McAllister. I think the sort of bigger the occasion, we've seen this in the World Cup, he's a player who just exerts sheer class in them moments, can play in the, on the biggest moments, on the biggest stage, being able to keep his head when, you know, all around and may not be able to do that. So, yeah, I felt all of them players were pivotal for Liverpool turning the game round. And sorry that I've gone on a bit, Dave, but I just wanted to make one more point on the Gravenberch sort of criticism. Isn't it sad that we have to get into the situation where people are scapegoated? Because I seen an interview at the end with Alexis McAllister and Cody Gakpo, and you can tell the players know that he's been taking stick, Gakpo, and it's just absolutely ridiculous for me where there has to be a player who's criticised. The team either win or lose based on the decision-making of all the players in all the different units of the team. And these players are really talented players. You know, sometimes they have peaks, sometimes they have troughs, but all players who can massively, you know, positively contribute to Liverpool and are all, by all accounts, great professionals. So I thought, you know, I hate to see that kind of thing. I hate that it goes on in the social media world. And I think it's really poor for that to be the case. I mean, it's, I suppose, unavoidable in the modern world, isn't it? But disappointing nonetheless.
Yeah, do you know, I was going to make a point about Gakpo and the whole scapegoating thing, because I saw sort of snippets of it on Twitter. And I think even sort of apart from the fact that, you know, you look at his numbers and he's, you know, he's perfectly good, really, for someone in his position with his minutes, things like that. I suppose, really, the point you're making there, Mark, is that even if those numbers were poor, the sort of the narrative around him, the way, you know, he's obviously receiving so much criticism and the way it's filtering through and stuff, it doesn't really matter that he doesn't necessarily deserve it, if that makes sense. And I agree that it is sad, because I just think every single fan base online, like, even no matter how well they're doing, they need a couple of players who they just sort of, I think there's just sort of this group thing that goes on, and everyone just kind of gets themselves into a situation where they're like, oh, he can't do this. He's the one who's going to, we can't see him on the pitch in this period. He's going to cost us, things like that. And when you actually stop and think about it, do the narratives that everyone's kind of peddling, do they actually make sense? And I just think it just feels like there's kind of a need for criticism. And because Liverpool have been in this situation where they're wildly overachieved, really, this season compared to what everyone expected. It's like, oh, we still need to almost get this criticism, you know, gene out on a couple of players. And I do feel like it's Gakpo and Gravenberch who've kind of borne the brunt of that. And I think it's unfair in both cases. And it is a real shame, because what purpose does it serve? And, you know, granted, constructive criticism of players, it's part of sort of our jobs. It's part of being a fan, really. But what purpose does it serve to criticise a player in such a way that he's actively aware of the fan base, portions of the fan base turning against him, to the point that it's getting, you know, alluded to in interviews and affecting his confidence? Because surely that kind of makes it worse. I just think there's a sort of tone to be struck with these type of things. And Gakpo has had bad games, and he has a game where he's been anonymous. But I just think the way that these things play out at times is completely counterproductive and a bit unfair on the part of supporters like that. So I was very pleased to see him score today anyway, and hopefully a tie into some of that. But like you were saying, Mark, it shouldn't have to be kind of that a player needs to sort of prove his worth in that way to avoid that kind of avalanche of criticism, I suppose. But it is what it is. I don't know how well I've sort of articulated myself on that, but I did what I sort of want to say from the moment really he scored. But as for the rest of the players, just quickly, McAllister, we're speaking about him on every single podcast, but rightfully so. I mean, one of the informed players in the Premier League at the moment. I think I said on the last podcast, he's benefited from playing alongside Endo, but he showed today that that's not been what it's all about. You know, he's really improved in his own right as well. Just sort of the level of bite in his play, the tackles he was winning, by far the best player for Liverpool for a large portion of this match. And looks like he's going to be an absolutely vital figure if Liverpool are to go on and win the title this season. A definite difference maker in that regard. To be honest, of the players who begun the game, not too many others jumped out to me. Credit to Nunez for chasing down that ball. I always want attackers to do it because I don't think there's anything to be lost from it. And as we've seen with Mane against, I think it might have been Stefan in the FA Cup semi-final, and a couple of other instances as well. You know, every so often you get a goal out of it. And that obviously happened today. A weird goal, but a big one nonetheless. And then the subs. I mean, being a weird season for Andy Robertson with all the injuries he's had and kind of the disruption and things like that. But if he can play like he did today, then he's going to be a key contributor as well at the final part of the season. Harvey Elliott, it just gives you confidence now when he comes on into a game. Curtis Jones, you mentioned him. Typical Curtis Jones in a way. He's only on for 17 minutes, but exactly what we've been seeing from all season in terms of under the radar, but really important. He said, did he give the ball away? 94% passing accuracy, only gave it away twice, considering how much he was on the ball in that period with 33 touches. That's really impressive as well. And then, yeah, obviously Gakpo, like we've already talked about. And also credit to Keller, who I think has now matched Alisson for appearances this season. Made some big saves again in this game. We'll see how many more he's got before Alisson comes back into the team. But yeah, we'll leave it there for this podcast. Liverpool, with 30 games played, are top of the table. But based on how this one went, it's going to be very much a emotional roller coaster between now and the end of the season. And the next stop on that ride is Old Trafford. Liverpool will obviously look to avenge that defeat this over in the FA Cup. So make sure you join us for our post-match episode after that one, when hopefully we'll have a much different tone to strike compared to a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, obviously an absolutely vital test of Liverpool's credentials. So yeah, stick around for that one. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed this, please give us a 5-star review. Remember to follow the podcast, press the notification button, all of that. And we'll see you after the Man United game. Until then, take care.